The nervous temperament. It has been my fortune as a physician to deal much with the so-called nervous temperament. I have come both to fear and to love it. It is the essence of all that is bright, imaginative, and fine, but it is as unstable as water. Those who possess it must suffer. It is their lot to feel deeply, and very often to be misunderstood by their more practical friends. All their lives, these people will shed tears of joy and more tears of sorrow. I would like to write of their joy, of the perfect satisfaction, the true happiness that comes in creating new and beautiful things, of the deep pleasure they have in the appreciation of good work in others. But with the instinct of a dog trained for a certain kind of hunting, I find myself turning to the misfortunes and the ills. The very keenness of perception makes painful anything short of perfection. What will such people do in our clanging streets? What of those fine ears tuned to the most exquisite appreciation of sweet sound? What of that refinement of hearing that detects the least departure from the rhythm and pitch in complex orchestral music? And must they bear the crash of steel on stone? The infernal clatter of traffic? Well, yes. As a matter of fact, they must at least for a good many years to come, until advancing civilization eliminates the city noise. But it is not always great noises that disturb and distract. There is a story told of a woman who became so sensitive to noise that she had her house made soundproof. There were thick carpets and softly closing doors. Everything was padded. The house was set back from a quiet street, but that street was strewn with tan bark to check the sound of carriages. Surely, here was bliss for the sensitive soul. I need not tell the rest of the story, how absolutely necessary noises became intolerable, and the poor woman ended by keeping a man on the place to catch and silence the tree toads and crickets. There is nothing to excuse the careless and unnecessary noises of the world. We shall dispose of them finally as we are disposing of flamboyant signboards and typhoid flies. But meanwhile, and always for that matter, the sensitive soul must learn to adjust itself to circumstances and conditions. This adjustment may in itself become a fine art. It is really the art by which the painter excludes the commonplace and irrelevant from his landscape. Sometimes we have to do this consciously. For the most part, it should be a natural, unconscious election. I am sure it is unwise to attempt at any time the dulling of the appreciative sense for the sake of peace and comfort. Love and understanding of the beautiful and true is too rare and fine a thing to be lost or diminished under any circumstances. The cure, as I see it, is to be found in the cultivation of the faculty that finds some good in everything and everybody. This is the saving grace. It takes great bulks of the commonplace and distills from the mass a few drops of precious essence. It finds in the unscholarly and the imperfect rare traces of the good. It sees in man, any man, the image of God, to be justified and made evident only in the sublimity of depth, perhaps, but usually to be developed in life.